Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Thursday, November 2nd, 2023. Hello, Dave.
Hey, Melody. How are you?
I'm doing great, thanks.
Well, believe it or not, today is National Men Make Dinner Day. Hallelujah, says the women of the world. First Thursday in November places the man of the house in charge of the kitchen and the evening's meal. Well, some men do like to cook and do so on a regular basis. To those men, hats off to you. This day was created, though, for the men who don't know their way around the kitchen, as well as for the women in their lives who just need a break. Now, look, guys, you need to be aware that there's a list of rules that have to be followed. The main meal has to include a minimum of 4 ingredients and require at least one cooking utensil other than a fork. The man does the shopping for all the necessary ingredients, and you have to clean up as you go. Aprils happen to be optional. So get to it, guys. The day is quickly coming to a close. Happy National Men Cook Dinner Day.
Well, you know, not only do they cook, but it should be extended into cleaning up also.
Doing the dishes.
Doing cleaning the kitchen 100%.
So I gotcha. All right. Yeah. Now you're getting a little carried away.
Well, for that one day for the day.
All right. Fair enough.
Come on.
Fair enough.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and take a peek at gold today. You know, it's 1986, up a couple bucks today. Silver is still down at 22.85. Platinum was down $2 at 932, but palladium was higher by 3 at 1,135. The USDX today, now that was lower by 0.48, and, you know, gold struggled a little bit, but we're still seeing the USDX at that 106, above the 106. So I don't think you're going to see a lot of change in gold prices until it breaks the 106 or it goes into the 107 territory. Crude oil was up $2 today at 82.35. And the paper markets today, this is the best day the Dow's had since June, as we're beginning to see some of the bond yields recede. We have, that was up 564 points, go figure. It just amazes me. The S&P was up almost they were all up almost 2% for the day. Can't figure it out because all the news out there should read a little bit more negative, but hey, we'll take it what we can get. European markets, I'm sure they were all positive. Oh, absolutely. Something's got to be going on in the background for everything to be, I mean, all markets, all countries. Asian markets were positive. 10-year yield, I mean, 4.66. And my theory on that is, we'll talk a little bit about the Fed holding the rates steady, and possibly the Fed could be done raising rates, but they can't have that 10-year over 5 because that's when they really have issues with the paper market. That's when you begin to see things happen. So whatever they do, it's just not real markets that move these numbers. I'm sorry, I don't believe it's just a true market. There's a lot of things that go into it, and I do believe they can move it one way or another to some, you know, to get what they want. But so I find that interesting that just as soon as it comes down and breaks down through 5, then you have these huge up days and vice versa. When it goes above 5, you have big down days. So 5 is an interesting number. Natural gas was a little bit higher, 3.498. 3.498 for natural gas. And, you know, I said we're going to talk about it a little bit. Not too much because, you know, it just, I don't know, Dave. Jerome Powell is boring. He hinted that the Fed may now be finished with the most aggressive tightening cycle in 4 decades, and held off on raising the interest rates for a second consecutive policy meeting. This was yesterday. We've seen it in the markets. So now he doesn't know. Should we hike more? Slowing down is giving us, he thinks, a better sense of how much more we need to do if we need to do more. Oh, I mean,
say
really?
It again, Mr. Monotone.
You know, I mean, are you kidding me? You know, supposedly him raising these rates over the how long didn't do anything to supposedly slow down the economy. So I don't know what they're bragging about. Officials signed in their joint statement that a recent rise in longer-term Treasury yields reduces the impetus to hike again, though they left open the door to another increase. Of course they did. Nah. What say you, Dave?
I think the Fed is going to have to ask Congress for authority to, one, eliminate credit cards, and two, invest in, what are those things called? Oh, gosh. Well, they're like the plastic things that are now used as handcuffs
the tie bags?
Thank you. Yes. So that every American consumer can put tie backs around their hands to prevent further spending. Because other than that, you ain't going to have the kind of growth, slow growth, no growth, that the Fed is looking for. In any event, with respect to yesterday, former New York Fed Pres Bill Dudley said that the Fed's basically saying, we don't think we will have to do much more from here. Well, Bloomberg's chief U.S. economist Anna Wong said both Powell and the FOMC policy statement sounded dovish overall, adding, considering the hawkish way officials could have interpreted the positive economic surprises since their September meeting, this all suggests the FOMC is inclined to go on an extended rate pause. Well, we will see. The Fed chief told reporters in his post-meeting presser that decisions will be made meeting by meeting. Isn't that how they've always done it? And noted the committee will have an abundance of data. Well, nothing to add to that, other than, you know, that's going to include two more employment and inflation reports, as well as other data on financial conditions and, of course, geopolitical risks before the December meeting. He also said Fed leaders are monitoring the Israel-Hamas war for economic implications. But
I'm sure there will be none coming out of that. There doesn't matter what's going on in the world. There's never any economic implications from anything. I mean, heck, the Panama Canal is just about shut down because of drought. But do you hear anybody saying what impact that has? In the Mississippi, I don't know if the Mississippi has recovered a little bit with some possible rains that they've had, but it's not back to normal. So, but nothing matters. We're all good. We're all happy.
Yep, we're
fat and happy.
Be positive thinkers.
That doesn't help people's pocketbooks across this country that are hurting and are trying to make decisions based on the information that they receive. You know, because then all the decisions that they make based on wrong information doesn't help them. You know, and that's the problem. You know. I did hear...
The bigger problem, I might say, though, is that not enough of us tune in and are interested in having that kind of information. And I think that state of being uninformed, tells a lot about where we are and where we might be headed. But I agree with what you said. I just think that this is... taking that aspect a step further.
And it's true. You just can't read headlines and go to your place and believe, you know, if you might like somebody on TV or something like that, there's some things you can follow and know that it's right, and other things you got to do your own research. You just can't take their word for it. Steve Leisman I wanted to bring this to your attention, Dave. Was it this morning, or maybe it was yesterday? I was listening to him, and he says that they're actually working on a new way to report retail sales, because the retail sales from government numbers are always so skewed; they're always revised. He says they're working on using actual credit card receipts as part of the equation. And he said there will be no revisions. He says, and we've been running a test on it for the past couple of months.
Interesting.
And the question was, well, how does it fare with the government numbers? And he just said, all I'm going to say is that it's lower.
Interesting.
And very so interesting. He didn't say when that would be completed, when the testing would be done, and so forth, but they're working on maybe a more accurate report. But then again, he's mainstream media for Wall Street, so you can't tell me they're not going to have some little back door to it that they can adjust it if they need to. But I found it interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting. I hadn't seen that. Thanks for bringing that to our attention.
Yeah, he didn't talk much about it, but he was letting it out of the bag for some reason. So, what, you know, to me, that's inside trading, because now you're going to have some, yeah.
Well, it sounds like it might be in the offing, the official release.
Right. So, speaking of worker productivity, well, that grew at its quickest pace in 3 years in the third quarter. Non-farm productivity, which... well, that measures your hourly output per worker. So that increased at 4.7% annualized rate last quarter. And supposedly this is the fastest since the third of 2020. Now, the surge in productivity was flagged by a report last week showing that the GDP grew by 4.9%. I just have to laugh. Productivity grew at a 2.2% pace from a year ago. So it gets a little confusing in there, Dave, but
it does. It does. Rate of growth and productivity for this entire business cycle through the third quarter is 1.4%. Back hefty increases in productivity will likely be welcomed by Fed officials. Since March 2022, the Fed's raised its policy rate by 525 basis points, 5.25%, to the current range. Unit labor costs, which is the price of labor per single unit of output, actually fell at a 0.8% rate in the third quarter, having grown at 3.2% pace in the second. Now, on an annualized basis, they rose at 1.9%. They say that's a step in the right direction toward bringing inflation down to the Fed's 2%. A lot of numbers to digest. Their relevance and their meaning, well, I think it's in the eye of the beholder, Melody.
You know, it's interesting, yesterday, and we didn't have a chance to talk about this yesterday, the Institute for Supply Management's manufacturer gauge, that fell 2.3 points. Now, that's the biggest monthly decrease in more than a year, to 46.7. And, of course, we all know that any readings below 50 indicate a contraction. And the October index trailed all estimates in the Bloomberg survey. So, you know, demand remains soft. The October decline wiped out much of the progress in the prior 3 months, leaving the ISM index close to its lowest level since the aftermath of the pandemic.
Well, you know what that tells me? That suggests that businesses who do generally pay, I think we can agree, pay more, if not a lot more attention on a day-to-day basis with all of these figures, might know something a little bit more than, say, the rest of us lowly consumers do. Hang on to your wallets, ladies and gentlemen. Don't go too far more into debt, because the big R has not gone away just yet. And in fact, it could be just around the corner.
Well, you know, there was also a report, the ISM production gauge moved closer to stagnation, and that's a measure of factory payrolls, slipped back into contraction territory to the newest, to the lowest level in 3 months. So, I mean, that's, you pay attention to those and you try to reflect that with, you know, some of this happy good news. Now, they're going to blame this report, and the reason why it's lower is due to the strikes. So they'll always find a reason, and it's just like, oh, good Lord. But anyway.
Well, you know what, though? I mean, I did see a figure that they're just shy of 1 million auto workers in the U.S. Now, think about that for a second. 1 million. Now, I think there were, what, 50,000 or less workers on strike?
Yeah.
Still, you know, the big three car makers were complaining that the strike had a major impact on revenues and profits over the summer. Gosh, to that extent, I mean, what's 50,000 out of a million, 5% of the workforce? I don't know. Just seems a little dubious, that claim.
Mm-hmm. I know. And so it's just, so we just go forward, and something to think about. And we have another jobless claims today. Unemployment claims rose by 5,000 to 217 for the week ending October 28th by the Labor Department reported today. And again, the jobless claims applications are seen as representative of the number of layoffs in a given week. And we get the jobs report tomorrow. So it'll be interesting. We'll be right back right after this short break.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home. And if you ask me how I'm feeling, don't tell me you're too blind to see. Never gonna give you up, never gonna let you down, never gonna run around and desert you, never gonna make you cry, never gonna say goodbye, never gonna tell a lie and hurt you, never gonna give you up, never gonna let you.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. And again, I'm Melody Cederstrom. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com. dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for a weekly newsletter and blog, and that is edited by Dave Allen. We also have some other articles in there from Wendy Wilson and Doug Nolan. Yeah, so, and sometimes we get other things in there too.
I learned today via email from our friend Wendy that you and her started this newsletter together years ago. We did.
Yes, we used to be in Bob Chapman's newsletter, and then he passed, and we didn't know if they were going to keep his newsletter going, in which Jennifer Chapman is still doing it.
Wow.
She still publishes it after 10 years, and so at that point in time, we thought, well, why don't we combine health and wealth? So
there you go.
Yeah, so
the rest is history.
It's you do
a lot since then.
You do a fine job. You do a fine job in producing it. So,
well, we have some good writing. Wendy always interesting, fascinating stories about about our bodies and the nature of the health industry and what have you, things mm-hmm. to look out for, be skeptical of. Doug Nolan, a prolific writer and very poignant. I mean, as long as his weekly credit bubble bulletins are, you just got to keep reading because it's all interesting information. So we're lucky to have those two.
You know, I interviewed Doug, and unfortunately, he went to work somewhere else. I interviewed him a couple times, and what I liked about him, and I can't find anyone else like him, is, well, we don't use sensationalism. We don't, and neither does he. And that's what I liked. He's not pitching to sell. He wasn't pitching anything to sell.
Just the facts, ma'am.
Just the facts. Now, he did go to work for one of my competitors. And so now, yes, there's a little bit of more of a, but he writes the same. That hasn't changed. He doesn't pitch anything in his writing.
No.
But he does work for a competitor, and we're still very much, we're much more competitive than what they are, and they've gone off on a goofy thing, and they've been around for a long time, but anyway, DGScoins.com, DGScoins.com. I didn't know where you wanted to start.
You mentioned briefly about the Bank of England.
Okay.
And we can move on.
Okay. All right. Did you want to talk about it, or did you want me to?
I'll get started. Across the big pond, just to keep in mind, the Bank of England kept its main interest rate steady today at 5.25%. Again, like the Fed, the ECB, all indicating that borrowing costs will likely remain at these elevated levels for a while. Especially in the case of the BOE and ECB, if oil and gas prices increase because of either Israel, Hamas, or Russia, Ukraine, as we quickly approach another winter. Now, the bank's 9-member Monetary Policy Committee indicated that inflation, as measured by the CPI anyway, set to fall pretty dramatically in the Eurozone area, in the UK. In the next month or so, but still going to need more time to get to their own 2% target over the course of 2024. Their big guy, Governor Andrew Bailey, said we'll be watching closely. See if further rate increases are needed, but even if they are not, it is much too early to be thinking about rate cuts. There you are.
All righty. You know, the holidays are coming up, and that is the topic of your levity is golden.
How about it? Well, as ladies and gentlemen, as you start shopping for your friends and loved ones this coming holiday season, there's an art to picking the ideal gift, turns out. Giving gifts, of course, can be easily dismissed as, well, pure consumerism. But the best-selling author Gretchen Rubin, whose latest book called Life in Five Senses, published earlier this year, says that's all wrong. She says, quote, gift-giving is a universal cultural practice. It's of enormous importance in how people engage with one another. She even released her gift-giving quiz today for understanding what she calls other people's gift appreciation profiles. Interesting. Now, according to her, there are four kinds of gift recipients. The connoisseur knows the best of the best and tends to prefer quality over quantity. I might be spending a little bit more on them. Probably be thrilled with a high quality version of something they regularly used but wouldn't splurge on for themselves. Next, an easy-to-please person appreciates the personal touch, would likely love something handmade or an item that would remind them of a shared memory with the gift giver. An enthusiast is a person who loves variety and might like scoring the hottest new gadget or a chance to check out the trendiest new restaurant in town with a gift certificate. But a tried and true person, however, likely revels in getting the same gift year after year. That person might feel like they're being inconsiderate, the gift giver might feel like they're being inconsiderate by buying their dad peppermint bark year after year. Not so if he's a tried and true kind of guy, Ruben says. She said he wants that peppermint bark and looks forward to it, and you will disappoint him if all of a sudden you switch. Well, in any event, Ruben says one of the best ways to make ourselves happy is to make other people happy. Giving gifts is a way to make people feel like you really understand their nature and that you're paying attention to their interests. So, Melody, now you have it. You're a more informed Christmas shopper. So get to it.
Now, how does that apply to all of the gift cards that people buy?
that must be a fifth category because I don't see that. Let's see.
Gift card, a guy who likes the peppermint bark. Well, maybe you can get him a gift card for candy. I don't know.
Tried and true. Yeah, I don't know. But
that's all anybody does anymore.
Boring. Come except on, use little, your imagination,
except
people.
Except for the little kitties. Except yeah. for the little kitties.
Well, you there know. You go.
There you go. You know, we've talked about Powell and what he's doing, and, you know, he thinks that the economy is capable of growing faster than usual without any inflationary pressure. Of course, that's what he has to say, because that's why he didn't change increase the rates. I mean, you have Schwab, they're laying off 2,200 workers, calling it hard but necessary. Delta is laying off corporate workers to cut costs.
Yeah.
But yeah, hey, okay, there's no inflationary pressure. Costs are killing businesses to where they have to lay off people. So you have Panera Brands is laying off 17% of its corporate staff.
Wow.
That's huge, 17%.
I guess I better go back to buying Campbell's soup again.
There you go. So, I mean, to where, you know, they're looking at, it's not going to have any inflationary pressure. Well, you know, if you can a lot of people, if you lay off a lot of people, yeah, I guess maybe their little theory on supply and demand. So, I mean, it's just, and that's what economists say. That the potential is rising unusually fast right now because of supply side improvements. Really? And why are there shelves still bare? Are we just getting used to it? And all of a sudden their new figuring for, supply side improvements, is that what it means? And again, as I mentioned, the Panama Canal doesn't mean anything. That Mississippi, where they transport, nothing matters. Gasoline, even, yes, our gasoline went down, but diesel still close to five bucks, and probably a lot of places across the country is more than that.
Yeah.
So, our gasoline prices go down, but not the truckers and everything else. So, I don't know, Dave. What are they smoking in there, up there in D.C.?
Must be good stuff. It's certainly certainly improving their imagination. All this means that the supply side of the economy, which is referred to in this article as America's economic potential, may be rising faster than the sub 2% rate most economists believe to be plausible in the long run. And that's why GDP is running so high, because we're getting that supply. So Powell says we welcome that. In any event, to the degree strong growth reflects improvement in the supply side of the economy, it's something, I guess, the Fed's embracing. And not, but if, I don't know. Bottom line, I guess, the economic narrative is more of a theory than a proven fact. I don't know what happens from here.
All right, let's go ahead and jump up to, you know, we often talk about affordable housing, how little affordable housing there is. And in some areas, we continue to see home prices rise. A starter home in particular in a major city, you know, might seem more like a myth than a reality. There are 15 major U.S. cities where starter homes can be found for under $230,000, but I don't think anybody wants to live in those cities or the neighborhoods. Maybe, I don't know, it's just a thought, and it's sad. I mean, can you imagine, Dave, when we were even 30 years old, thinking that a $230,000, you had to be wealthy, you had to be a millionaire in order to own a $250,000 home.
Yeah, that was big time.
Yes.
The town we grew up in, that was almost, probably not even almost, that was mansion.
Yes.
Mansion neighborhood.
Yeah. And, you know, so it's still, you know, it's less than what the median price for a home is in the U.S. at $431,000. And, you know, everybody knows starter homes are most likely a relatively modest house. They're good for first-time home buyers and home buyers with, you know, lower incomes. And so so if you assume a 10% down payment, buyers would need incomes around $56,000, excluding other debts, to afford a $230,000 home. Well, you know, I'm sure they have lots of other debts that they probably wouldn't qualify. But anyway, home prices, they do vary by region, as I said. And again, I'm, you know, here in Detroit, based on Redfin real estate listings of the 50 largest U.S. cities, the following 15 markets had the lowest average starter home price as of August 2023. And again, my question is, I don't know who would, I wouldn't move to these cities. Detroit, $83,000. I think that is sad. Because when you view, when you're doing a comparison, I mean, an $83,000 home, that's got to be a pretty.
No, I'll tell you
distraught
what.
Home.
No. It turns out it's not in Detroit. Probably similar in some of these other places, perhaps. But you know, I didn't do a thorough review, but I did do a little checking on Zillow when I saw this. And there's some pretty big homes, older homes. You're right; they're probably in disrepair, and the neighborhoods that a lot of them were in looked like they were once thriving areas of the city, but long ago. Became downtrodden as people split for the burbs and other parts of the country.
Well, manufacturing left.
And there you go.
Yeah, manufacturing left Detroit. You know, there's nothing there for people anymore.
I'm just looking. Well, one, Detroit, Cleveland, Memphis, Milwaukee, St. Louis, Buffalo, Kansas City, Baltimore, Indianapolis, Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, Oklahoma City, all have one or more professional sports teams, which is now used as one of the barometers for good places to live. in terms of, you know, quality of life, entertainment aspect of living. Of course, if you can afford it. I read over the summer, you know, a lot of baseball stadiums now, an outing for a family of four to a stinking baseball game with a hot dog and a soda, $400.
Oh, my. Unbelievable. What is also unbelievable is I hear music. That means we're heading into a break already. You got it. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Down and take a look at me. Come on, baby. Don't say baby. I gotta know if your sweet love is gonna save me. We may lose and we may win, but we will never be here again. So open up, I'm climbing in. So take it easy.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hey, welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Melody off the final segment, taking care of other client business. You know where to get her, 1-800-375-4188. Right before the break, we're talking about affordable housing. 15 most affordable cities. I talked about most of them before the break. Generally speaking, most affordable homes are found in smaller cities that aren't major coastal hubs like the Midwestern cities of Indianapolis, but also southern cities like Birmingham and Alabama. You contrast that to starter homes in San Francisco. Listen to this. Cost a median of $999,000, according to this study, making it the least affordable place to become a homeowner. Well, I guess at that price, it's not really a starter home at all. Since homebuyers owning the median income of $75,000 roughly wouldn't be able to afford it. Hey, one thing that could lower housing prices across the country on a broader basis is a decision by a Kansas City jury yesterday. It took that jury just 3 hours to find that the National Association of Realtors conspired with two of the nation's largest brokerages to keep commissions on home sales high. Now, it's going to take a lot longer for that verdict's ramifications to play out, but if the jury's verdict is upheld on appeal, brokers' fees will likely shrink and home sale prices, could fall, and some significantly. Homebuyers throughout the U.S. spend around $100 billion a year on broker fees. The decision here puts the defendants on the hook for $1.8 billion of that, with possibility of treble damages, and could also shake up the business of buying and selling homes. Real estate agents, investors, and mortgage brokers are said to be nervous about what's to come as a result of this. An issue in the lawsuit were the commissions paid to real estate agents on most home sales. Right now, sellers typically pay a fee of 5 to 6% of a home sales price. That money is split generally between the seller's agent and the buyer's agent. Well, the plaintiffs in this case argued that the realtors, the NAR, and its co-defendants conspired to keep those rates high and that the system prevents sellers or buyers from negotiating the fees down. NAR said it would appeal the verdict and asked the judge to lower the damages awarded. Even so, it's likely that these fees are going to start dropping. Real estate brokerage firms might start telling their agents to have conversations with clients about fees and welcoming negotiations. That sort of thing could spur fee competition between brokers. Imagine. And competition is a great way to bring prices down. Over the longer term, if the jury's verdict is upheld, the plaintiffs have also asked the judge to establish a remedy. To take a page from actress Gwyneth Paltrow, that could mean that fees get conspicuously uncoupled. That is, sellers pay their real estate agent and buyers pay theirs. And each then could negotiate that fee down. The upshot, well, home prices could be falling. It's because right now the fee paid to a home buyer's agent is baked into the home sale price. So if that fee goes away or is reduced, the sale price naturally will be lower. Interesting development there. Another in Washington, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer and 22 fellow Democratic senators urged federal regulators to investigate the multi-billion dollar acquisitions by oil giants ExxonMobil and Chevron. Senators say the deals would stifle competition and lead to higher prices at the gas pump. In a letter to the Federal Trade Commission, the lawmakers said Exxon's proposed $60 billion acquisition and Chevron's proposed $53 billion purchase are the two largest petroleum deals in history, U.S. history anyway, and could violate antitrust law. Supporters of the deals have argued that the global market for oil and gas is so large that even dominant firms like Exxon or Chevron can't restrict global capacity. On the other side, the objecting senators wrote, the FTC must consider how Exxon or Chevron's vertically integrated operations may harm competition in spite of the global market. Well, as we've been reporting and talking about on this program, Chevron, Exxon, and other oil companies have announced huge profits from strong energy prices and demand, especially since Russia's invasion of Ukraine last year. Exxon reported $9.1 billion in profits in the third quarter alone this year, while Chevron reported $6.5 billion. Exxon says the proposed deal with Texas-based Pioneer Resources would enhance U.S. energy security and benefit the American economy and consumers. It said, for all those concerned about competition, the fact that the two companies combined represent just 5% of U.S. oil production should set their mind at ease. For all those who seek even greater U.S. energy independence and far lower emissions, they add, this merger represents nothing but upside for our economy and our environment. Chevron said its proposed deal with New York-based Hess would strengthen long-term performance while delivering higher returns and lower carbon dioxide emissions. Both deals have to be approved by federal regulators. Now, environmental groups hailed the call for an investigation of what some are calling merger mania within the oil industry that threatens competition. One of them, Luke Gross at Friends of the Earth, said, "Big oil getting bigger is a threat to our climate and democracy." Spokesperson for the American Petroleum Institute said the proposed mergers would increase production and improve environmental performance. Now, Schumer and other Democrats targeted the oil industry last year as they made a failed bid to give the FTC increased authority to crack down on companies that engage in price gouging. The bill to crack down on price gouging wasn't approved in that last Congress, but a similar bill is pending before the Senate Commerce, Science, and Transportation Committee. That bill, called the Consumer Fuel Price Gouging Prevention Act, would make predatory price hikes unlawful and expand federal authority to investigate alleged price gouging. Always something. Hey, yesterday, again, as expected, the Fed decided to hold steady its benchmark Fed funds rate in that range of 5.25% to 5.5%, at least until it meets again on December 12 and 13. At his post-meeting press conference, Fed Chair Powell waxed poetic about his and his colleagues' continued focus on all things economic. In particular, he told us that despite all the uncertainty in the markets, the Fed remains committed to whack-a-moling inflation back to its long-term target of 2% without throwing the nation into recession. Now, before that, Powell had weighed in with his diagnosis of the surge in long-term interest rates, saying, quote, "Additional evidence of persistently above-trend growth or that tightness in the labor market is no longer easing could warrant further tightening of monetary policy." Well, and last weekend, again before the Fed decision yesterday, two of President Biden's top economic gurus, both former Fed honchos, also opined on what's happening and why. One of them was Treasury Secretary Janet Queen of Data Yellen, Powell's predecessor as Fed chair. She dismissed the idea that the expectation of higher future budget deficits is the major driver of rising rates and falling prices of longer-term treasury bonds. Instead, she stressed the role of higher expectations for a growing U.S. economy, saying the economy is continuing to show tremendous robustness, and that suggests that interest rates are likely to stay higher for longer. Well, director of the White House National Economic Council, Lyle Brainard, former Fed vice chair under Powell, said, quote, "I think it's too early to tell exactly what the relative contributions are," noting that both fundamental and technical factors are at play. She said there are changes in supply and demand in the short term on the technical side that market participants are certainly pointing to as part of the story. In terms of the fundamentals, she pointed out that fiscal policy may be a part of that. Higher productivity may be a part of a somewhat stronger neutral rate of interest. Well, recent data from the government has made one thing crystal clear. The surge in consumer spending continues to fuel strong economic growth. Spending by consumers rose by a hot 0.4% in September alone, even after adjusting for inflation, and even as Americans face higher borrowing costs, mainly in their credit cards. Still, most economists are cautioning that such robust spending is unlikely to continue in the coming months. For one thing, many households have been already pulling their money from their savings accounts. Government report on third quarter GDP shows that personal savings as a percentage of disposable personal income 27% in the third quarter, from 5.2% in the second to 3.8% in the third. It's still trending downward. Savings averaged, 18% during the pandemic in 2020 and 2021. from the end of the Great Recession to February 2020, it averaged 7.25%, according to the Fed. Largely as a result of that, households have been turning increasingly to, again, their credit cards. As Melody and I have been discussing on this program ad infinitum, American credit card debt now exceeds $1.3 trillion, an average of over $8,000 per cardholder. Notably, a good portion of that debt since the start of the pandemic has been spent on households' everyday needs like food, clothing, shelter, gas, and so forth. Now, economists say the additional savings amassed by tens of millions of households during the pandemic are virtually gone. Still, consumers aren't running en masse to the sidelines. There hasn't been a huge jump in joblessness, and a resulting deep recession projected by many for over a year hasn't come to fruition, at least yet. But look, the future remains highly volatile and uncertain. There's a lot of doom and gloom out there. Consumer spending is projected to cool down significantly over the coming months, in fact. And that's one important reason why the Fed, I say, should chill until at least early in the new year. That is, they should wait and see how holiday spending goes, how consumer prices react, and how small business and corporate earnings perform, plus how the overall economy fares in the fourth quarter before thinking about raising rates any further. Yes, Americans are spending more money. That should be a good thing, right? But our incomes aren't keeping up. Personal consumption expenditures, the Fed's preferred inflation metric, rose a blistering 0.7% in September, 0.4% when adjusted for inflation. But real disposable personal income, that is adjusted for inflation, actually fell 0.1% and is now down for 4 consecutive months. In fact, it hasn't been that low since 2008. You know what happened then? If that continues, it creates a big risk for the economy in 2024 that consumers will be forced to cut back, and substantially possibly. PCE report did show stable inflation overall at 3.4% on an annualized basis, and core inflation, excluding food and energy, edging down to 3.7%, the lowest since 2021. But core inflation ticked up month over month to 0.3%. That's the highest since May. For the 3 months ending in September, core inflation, PCE inflation, is 2.5%, up from 2% a month earlier. Thus, the consumer spending growth we saw this summer indeed may not hold for too much longer, and that despite ample unspent credit card balances, given weaker income growth and too high inflation. You know, that ought to be good news for the Fed. Still, I have little faith in members of the FOMC who have shown that they have little patience for doing nothing. Hey, that's all the time we have for today's program. I'll be back next Tuesday. Melody will be back tomorrow with Butch to close out the week. Also, be on the lookout for our weekly What a Rush of Gold and Silver blog in your inboxes in the AM. Thanks always to our production engineer, Todd Waite, and to you for tuning into Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there. Have a good evening. Bye-bye.
Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad. Eat my